Blog Talk Radio.
No joking, every word that I've spoken to show this. Capitalism is a prison of greed. Fuck what they want, I'm interested in what the whole world needs.
With an effort, with a rim, with a noise in your hand, with a voice when the balls say no fucking more. This is the sound of it all coming down.
Hello, hello, welcome to the show. And this is Tim Gatto, and we're here on the air, and we're supposed to have John Rachel come on the air, and I hope he didn't get his days mixed up, but he's living in outside of Osaka, Japan, and John is an author. He's written 3 books, and I lost his bio, but I got a little bit of it. Since leaving New York, the U.S. in 2006, he has lived and explored 33 countries. He's now somewhat rooted in a traditional rural Japanese community about an hour from Osaka, where he lives with his wife of 5 years. Daily rides his bicycle through the soybean fields and rice paddies, which sprawl across the surrounding landscape. As of the date of his release of his most recent book, The Peace Dividend, the most controversial proposal in the history of the world. And he also has a small but promising organic vegetable garden. So that's John Rachel. And he's got a few interesting theories about, you know, what we should be doing. And what direction we should be heading in. And I hope, like I said, I hope he didn't get his days mixed up. And for anybody looking at the show, it says 15 minutes. So if John shows up, we're going to be here for a lot longer than 15 minutes. So don't turn away after 15 minutes, because we're going to be here for a while. If John shows up, if he doesn't show up, I'm just going to go on a rant. And if anybody's listened to my show over the last 4 years or so, I have a tendency to do that every once in a while, go on rants. And some of my best work has been done during rants. So we're waiting for John to call up. It's like I had Finney Cunningham on last Saturday, and I tried to tape it, and it didn't turn out too well. And so he's going to be on next Saturday. So hopefully I get a better... we have to tape it, because he's in East Africa, and the internet cuts out and comes back in. And that's why I tape it, because there's really no sense in trying to get, you know, guest callers in or anything like that, because the internet is so... unpredictable. So anyway, we're waiting for John to call in, and here he is. I think that's him. That'd be good. And let's see, where is he? Okay. Here he is. John, are you there? Hold on. I have a hard time with this. Don't ask me why. But I do have a hard time with it. John, can you hear me? John, can you hear me? John, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, that's good. I can hear you too.
All right. So we're in business.
Yeah, we're in business, finally. I'm sorry that everything is so screwed up, but it's working now, so let's
not jinx it. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How is it over there in Japan?
Well, in Japan, it is. We're approaching fall. This is one of the more beautiful seasons. We actually have seasons here where I'm located. Japan is such a long island chain. You know, Hokkaido has winters like Minnesota, and Okinawa is more like Hawaii, and I'm kind of halfway in between. So.
Ah. That's interesting. I was in Korea for 6 years, so I was in Japan for 1 week. I had a good time.
Korea is a lot colder place than Japan because it's a little bit north, you know.
Yeah, Korea has really cold winters and really hot summers.
Yes.
So, that's that. But I was in Japan. I liked it. I was in this place outside of Tokyo. And I was taking a military hop, so I was laid over for 5 days, and I had a great time though. Anyway, John,
so Timothy, I want to thank you for doing this. As we all know, Facebook and Twitter has become the enemy, and they are shutting down what used to be. At least a conversation. I never put much stock in what went on at Facebook. I did a lot of work there. I mean, thousands and thousands of postings, but I found the interaction to be very superficial. But even that is gone now. They're shutting everybody down. And if it weren't for people like you doing this, we would have very limited access to get our message out to people. So thank you so much for your hard work on this.
That's okay. I made a mistake when I scheduled the show. I forgot. I only scheduled it for 15 minutes, but we can talk as long as we want, and it'll go on the podcast. So don't worry about it. You know, if you hear them say, 5 minutes until the show ends, don't worry about it. We'll just keep on going. Because it will go on as long as up to 2 hours if we want. Okay, John, I lost your part of your bio, so I got it off of op-ed, and I just read it for everybody, and you wrote 3 books. What were the names of those books?
Well, I wrote 3 nonfiction books. One was called Candidate Contracts, Taking Back Our Democracy, and the subtitle was Empowering Third Parties, Radical Electoral Change and Empowering Third Parties. The second book was called Fighting for the Democracy We Deserve, and it was the first one was very much oriented toward the Green Party. Actually, it was kind of a tough love letter to the Green Party saying, here's how you can get it together and actually start winning some elections using the candidate contract strategy. Taking Back Our Democracy, Fighting for the Democracy We Deserve is kind of a shortened version of that, kind of a manual for online activists. And then my most recent book is the one that I probably am most proud of. It's called The Peace Dividend, the Most Controversial Proposal in the History of the World, an intentionally provocative title. So if we have time, that's what I want to get to. I want to get to how I feel that the peace dividend could inject some fresh energy into activism, into mobilizing the people and not just mobilizing the mobilizers. So those are the 3 books. And then in addition to that, I've of course written 8 novels. So.
Yeah. Cool. I wrote a novel and a nonfiction book, but both of them never sold anything. Anyway, we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you. And You know, so yeah, I'd like to get into anything you want to get into, and you know, we've been waiting a long time to finally get this stuff together, and I'm really glad you're on. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Let's get started. Go ahead. I was just going to say, let's just jump right in. It's interesting. The last 3 days have been a real kind of a re-education for me. I watched a Jimmy Dore, a three-part series of interviews with Chris Hedges. And then I also read, you saw those? Phenomenal commentary. And I have to say, you know, a lot of my ideas are not original, because they completely align with Chris Hedges' analysis of what has happened to our failed democracy and what has happened to our failed economic system. I also started reading Ralph Nader's new book, and Nader has always been one of my favorites. He's somebody I kind of converted me into an activist back in 1996 with his a speech I heard him make. I believe it was at Stanford University, about corporate power and how ultimately corporate power would destroy the country, and how prescient he was, because we are in the closing chapters of that particular assault on the American people. Anyways, his new book is called How the Rats Reformed the Congress, and it's a pretty gritty indictment of what has happened to our electoral system. So I guess the question why we're here is, can anything be done about it? And that's what I've devoted the last 7 years of my life to trying to answer that question.
Yeah, you know, not to belabor the point or anything, but I've been writing about this since 2001, and every time I hear Chris Hedges or you know, a lot of these people talk, it's stuff I've been writing about since 2002. Nobody was listening to me, you know, but Chris Hedges says it. Ooh, everybody listens to it. You know, the same thing with Jimmy Dore. I like Jimmy Dore. I mean, I never disagree with hardly anything he says. But the thing is, you know, I don't understand how, you know, I don't understand why it took these people 15 years to actually come out and say all this stuff. Well, I've been saying it since 2004. I've been writing about it. And if you ever look at my op-ed page, I mean, I got thrown off of op-ed for 2 years with the stuff I wrote about Obama. And all of a sudden, you know, it hasn't been but in the last 3 years or so that people realized that Obama was just a faux liberal, you know? And it just really boggles my mind sometimes when I think about how dumb the American people are, you know? And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying, you know, not dumb, but ignorant. Yeah,
whenever I see a Tim Gatto article pop up, that's the next thing I do. Well, I usually go get a cup of coffee, and then I read your article. I've been following you for a long time, and you always are right on the money. You are a victim, as I am, of a lack of star power, and that is our celebrity-oriented society. I mean, Taylor Swift, for God's sake, said something about the elections, and it's headline news. Taylor Swift. I mean, I love Taylor Swift. She's got great songs. She's cute. She knows how to dance and shake that thing. But what the hell has she got to do with the American political system? For one thing, she's Canadian. So in any case, you know, you shouldn't take it as a personal slight. You've been doing remarkable work. You've been speaking truth to power that people don't. And by the way, you can overrate the impact of a Chris Hedges or a Jimmy Dore, because yes, they have a following. Maybe you and I have a following of a couple thousand. Maybe they have a following of 50,000. But match that against the population of the United States, and that's one of the things that I want to talk about today. Is the unbelievably untapped power of the people. It's just sitting out there waiting for, it's a gigantic sleeping elephant waiting for someone to wake it up. And yet, many of the people that you and I admire, many of the people that read you and so forth, never talk to these people. And I'll tell you somebody who did. It was Donald Trump. Donald Trump is he may be an ignorant, blathering, narcissistic pile of garbage, but he's got very good sense of the public. And he went out there and he talked to some of those people, and he got elected. You know, that's a stark and harsh truth that we need to face. And we need to look at people like that, even though he nauseates us, you and I. We need to look at what he did and why his message resonated with enough people that he could. I mean, he had his own party against him. He had everybody stacked against him. You know, you even had droves of the establishment, the neoliberal establishment of Wall Street, flocking to Hillary, and Trump still won. So he must have been doing something right. And it was interesting to see this Chris Hedges' Jimmy Dore interview, because he talks about that. He talks about the fact that people are hurting out there. People are really, really hurting. It's not in the news because we're more concerned about Taylor Swift, and we're concerned about Trump's latest tweets and what I see this morning, big news, Melania's cabin of her airplane filled with smoke, and they had to land. I mean, this is really important stuff. But this is what is in the news, and this is what preoccupies basically monopolizes the attention of the American public. Yet those people, and I'd say that there's more than half, and Chris Hedges said there's definitely more than half of the people in America are really hurting. They live paycheck to paycheck. If they had an emergency, there's no way they could scrape the money together to hire an ambulance, whatever. This is the reality that a lot of people are living. And
but,
so,
you know, 40% of the American population is living below the poverty line. And, you know, that's a shame, because we're supposed to be the richest country in the world. Yet we spend 55% of our budget on the military, and the rest of the money, you know, 10% might go to Social Security, 5% might go to health care, but 55% of it goes to the military-industrial complex. That's why everybody's hurting. No infrastructure, you know. And we're polluting the planet with cars, and we could have had walkways, moving walkways or something like that, or bus systems or train systems or, you know, monorail systems, whatever, to cart
these
people.
You know, I live in a village, and not a village, but a small rural town out in the country, and I can ride my bike down to the train station, and I can be anywhere in Japan, anywhere in this entire nation, in a matter of hours. If I take the Shinkansen, I could be in Tokyo in 2 hours, and that's like that's 600 miles from here. Think about that. So, yeah, you're right. We could have all of this. America could be, they could have laid tracks, they could have high-speed train, they could have fuel-efficient means of transportation, things that are ecologically sound and sustainable. But, yeah, and thank you for making the point. The reason why we're hurting is because we have, for at least the last 26 years, before that, but I think that 1992 is a good place to start, because people have short memories as it is, but at least we can go back to the collapse of the Soviet Union. And we were promised at that time, we said, hey, this is a glorious new era we're entering. You're going to get a peace dividend. We're going to, all this money we've been spending on wars and on the military, we can now devote to making a better life for all Americans. This is what the promise. Well, yeah, it wasn't put in writing, but a lot of people took it seriously, and it was completely justified. It was completely justified that all that money could be skewed. And what has happened? And that's what the Peace Dividend Project is about. Is I very conservative analysis of how much of the public's money has been wasted on war and unnecessary military adventurism and empire building and buying military junk, half of which doesn't even work. I just saw the other day they grounded the entire fleet of F-35s because the damn thing doesn't work. You know, it's the plane costs $1.5 trillion to develop and manufacture, and it's falling apart. So this is so I came up. This is what I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. The peace dividend basically added up, not the speculative figures you see on the internet. I went to the government sources and said, how much has the you know, they claim that the war in Afghanistan has only cost $600 billion. It's actually probably a $1.5 trillion. But I took the government's own figures. And I have to update this because my book was written in 2016, and since then we've had exploding defense budgets and even more war. We're over $5 trillion that has been completely squandered and by the way, collected on false pretenses. I mean, the whole thing was fraudulently collected as necessary expenditure. Over $5 trillion. And that's the message I wish that the peace activists would take to the people. Yes, we should care about the bombing of wedding parties, and yes, we should care about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. Yes, those are things we should care about, you know, but you know what? The average Joe down there working two jobs just to keep his family alive doesn't have time and just doesn't have the energy to worry about the people in Yemen. Number one, he can't find it on a map. And number two, he's got to worry about his kid getting shot, going to school, to a horrible school that's understaffed and under-equipped. He's got to worry about the bald tires on his car. He's got to worry about making that house payment. He's got to worry about things. The things that are hurting him are the things that he really, truly cares about. It's not that he doesn't care. He cares about the things that are immediate to his own life. And that's what the peace dividend is about. It's framing peace in terms that everyday citizens can understand. You want to know why you're so behind on everything? Because your money has been stolen from you. And it is now in the hands, it has been stolen for the profits of the military industrial complex, and those profits just go into the bank accounts of the already ultra wealthy. This is your money, your tax dollars, and it's been ripped off from you. That's the crude version of the peace dividend project.
Right, you're exactly right. And you know, this is what I've been saying since the Iraq War. You know, why do we need endless war? I was born in 1950, okay, and ever since I can remember. Yeah, young guy. Ever since I can remember, we've been in a war. Yeah, simple as that. Ever since I can remember, the United States has been in some kind of altercation with other countries in the world. Never stopped.
Well, I've seen a statistic that in our 242-year history, we've been at war for like 226 years. So, it goes back. It goes back. You know, we've always been at odds with somebody.
It is. It just never ends. And I think people, you know, I live in South Carolina, which is, you know, supposedly a deep, dark red state. And I have had four strokes. I got to take Uber. And the only time me and my wife get out of the house is when we take Uber or Lyft or something. And I talk to their drivers, and everybody I talk to, one, they don't believe in the mainstream media anymore. And two, is they're tired of all these wars. They're just sick and tired of them. And it's getting to the point now where people, once you start taking the basic necessities away from people, that's food and shelter and you know, schooling for their kids and stuff like that, once you start taking that stuff away, there's going to be problems. And I can't understand why the powers that be don't understand that it's not just the people who are going to be suffering. They're going to be suffering too, because when this country erupts, it's going to be pretty bad, because once they realize they can push the government around, they're going to, you know, and the way to get them to push the government around, the way they, when they start to see gains from, you know, rebelling, they're going to do it. And nothing can push somebody faster than taking their basic needs away from them.
Well, absolutely not. So you tell me, because, I mean, this is all I think about, and I don't have an answer. How do you see that demand? I hate to use the word revolution because it's been so trivialized, but how do you, so whatever, this massive radical shift in America's priorities away from war and towards serving the needs of the people, how do you see that unfolding?
I don't know, but I tell you this, is I never thought that the Berlin Wall would come down. I never thought that the Soviet Union would disband, but it happened in a matter of 1 year. You know, and I don't know what's going to be the catalyst for this, but there's going to be something that's going to happen that, and I can't, I'm not a fortune teller, I don't know, but there's going to be something where people realize how much they've been taken for a ride and how much, no matter how they demonstrate peacefully, like 2008, were you in the country in 2008?
Yeah, no, I was traveling.
In 2008, they had the Occupy movement, and in every city, even here in South Carolina, there were people demonstrating in the streets, and you know, everybody was just sick and tired of the government taking their money and bailing out the big banks. And
even if I was traveling, I was following that on a daily basis, and there's a lesson. I wrote an article called Mobilization Without Method is Madness, because that's what the OWS was, one of the great lost opportunities for activism, because it collapsed. Well, it didn't collapse. It was dissembled by the Obama administration in a matter of just a few months. And you're right, it was worldwide. Of course it was worldwide. I mean, there were 200,000 people in the streets in Germany. You know, I was amazed at what was going on. But why do you think it collapsed?
I know why it collapsed, because they had these things called fusion centers all through the United States, where they had the FBI, the National Guard, the CIA, and all these other law enforcement agencies involved. And they went out and they started cracking heads. And they did this in like a bunch of cities, like 20, 30 different cities. And they did it all at once. And all of a sudden, people were running for their lives. That's what happened, especially in Oakland. You know, they went in there to the ports in Oakland and they started throwing people in jail and cracking heads and killing people. And it didn't get on the mainstream media. And that's what happened to Occupy. You know, police state.
Well, I agree with that. And that's the logistics of a police state. When something actually becomes threatening or has the potential to cause some genuine change, well, then you pull out the heavy armaments, which is what they did. But I would take the analysis to a different level. OWS had the greatest public platform in recent history. I mean, they had the eyes of the world. And beyond that, they had the most compelling, engaging, and truly truthful message to give the people. It was summed up in the meme, the 1% versus the 99%. And the reason why OWS caught the imagination of the world is because that is the dynamic that shapes the economics across the planet. It's not just the United States, but the United States, of course, is number one in everything. So it's the number one example of the abuse of common people by a ruling elite. And then it stopped. That was it. It stopped. The message stopped. We got this problem. It's like people standing around and going, oh my God, look, that house is burning down. Oh, this is terrible. And nobody calls the fire department. So this is what I say about mobilization without method is madness. I know that there was an experimental methodology in play with OWS, which was this idea of no hierarchy and certainly no authoritarian control, but they literally the ideal of having no leadership. Well, leadership does not, a lack of leadership does not equate to a lack of a message and a lack of an ultimatum. So the point I'm getting to is, and other people, this is not hardly original, but the message I'm getting to is that OWS made no line in the sand demand on the system. They didn't say, if you don't do this, then here's what's going to happen. Okay? And so
right.
if they had been able to translate all of that amazing awareness and energy and the visibility that they had into a concrete set of demands, this is what you're going to do. We're going to have this, or we're going to burn the fucking buildings down, or whatever, you know, whatever the consequence they decide on. That they could decide on it. They don't have to have one person stand up. They could decide on it democratically or whatever. But lacking that demand, when they were taken apart, there was no public outrage. Now, what if the public had been told, here's what we're going to get. Here's what OWS is going to deliver, and we're not going to take no for an answer. And it was the things that the public wanted, which the public definitely wants a fair distribution of wealth and so forth. They just want a livable wage. They want fair taxation. They want the end of the wars. They want a lot of things. The public is actually, whether they agree on gay marriage or whether they agree on abortion rights or whether they agree on immigration, they do agree on a lot of things. And this has been the core of just about everything I've tried to do. And I've got, by the way, I've got the same reception you had, so don't feel bad. But or I should say we should both feel bad. But if they had put it in those terms, if we don't get this, and if this is something the public could completely, the public already identified with the meme. It's all they needed was, these are like a 10-point plan or like the 10 commandments of OWS or something. If we don't get these things done, there's hell to be paid. And then a plan for getting those things inaugurated, getting them put into law, because nothing gets done unless it's written as a law. That's the reality. Okay, corporations get away with what they get away with because they change the law in their favor. We could get corporations to behave if we change the laws in our favor. So you have to put up a set of demands. You have to create a logical and doable path for getting those demands, and then present it to the establishment with consequences. You can't just present it, put it on a sign, and wave it at them. You have to present it with consequences. And that's the thrust of everything I've been trying to do. So I ask you, you know, the alternative is they're going to storm the buildings, they're going to burn down Wall Street, they're going to bomb. What is the alternative besides getting the laws passed that favor the people?
But you're not going to get the laws passed as long as the oligarchy is running the country. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And the thing is, you know, when you got to look at the big picture. The big picture is, okay, OWS failed. It failed because it had no leadership. It had no clear direction. And that's why I think it failed. And not only that, Obama cracked heads. You know, so between all that, it failed. But it laid the groundwork. It laid the groundwork for almost everything that Bernie Sanders said when he was running for president. He took that right out of the OWS playbook. You know, everything he said was right out of the OWS playbook. Playbook, and he almost became president. So it's the next time it happens, the next time we have a crash, or the next time the government wants to bail out the banks, or whatever happens, if people start losing their houses again, or, you know, all of this stuff, the next time it's going to be worse. Go ahead.
Well, but Tim, I'm not being critical of you, but you're the guy that just said a few minutes ago, the Berlin Wall fell. Who saw that coming? The Soviet Union collapsed. Who that? And now you're saying, oh, the oligarchy cannot be defeated. As long as things are the way they are, they will never change. Well, yes, you're right. But that's why we change the way things are. And we do have, to me, we have two options. There are two options available to us. One is a massive violent insurrection. And I think that's probably what's going to unfold. But there is an alternative available to us. It's a massive electoral insurrection. Now, until this very moment, third parties and independents have not been in the equation. And in this coming election, again, they're not in the equation because we don't put them in the equation. All right? But just look at some numbers here. I have to refer to one of my articles here to give you an idea of the power that's actually available in terms of an electoral insurrection. There are 235 million eligible voters in the U.S. 235 million. Now, how many people actually vote? Usually around 130 or 140 million. So literally, there's 100 million people that could vote that don't vote. So let's just do some math. Half of them, the bottom 50% of that 235 million, just statistically, are really hurting because of the economy. They're living in rundown communities. They're sending their kids to schools that are underfunded and poorly staffed. They're being driven to despair from lack of opportunities, etc. That's 117 million voters that are absolutely fed up with a system that's rigged against them. Now, you take the next 30%, that's the middle class. They're now starting to see the writing on the wall. Their taxes are going up. Their debt keeps mounting. Student debt is one. A lot of these middle class people send their kids to college. Student debt, they can't afford. They don't have any savings anymore. So they can't afford. So the kids have to borrow. They've got $1.5 trillion in college loan debt. The promised recovery from the 2008 collapse still hasn't arrived for these people. So there's another 30%, that's another 70 million people who are fed up with the gains. So you add 117 million and 70 million, that's 187 million voters potentially to uproot the current system. Now, I know there's a lot of election fraud, and I know that, so 187 million, maybe 20 million have been disenfranchised, maybe another 10 million are just not even in a position. Maybe they're chained to their hot water heaters in the basement. I don't know. But you still have way over 160 million people. If you talk to those people in their language and the things that concern them, I think that we have the potential. I can't predict the future. I'm like you. I don't have a crystal ball. But there's a potential exists. And right now, we don't tap into it. We'll talk about blue waves and red waves and all this. We don't talk. Most of these people do not vote because they don't have a reason to vote, because they came to the same conclusion you came to a minute ago, which is the way things are, nothing will ever change. I can't do anything about it. But you give them a real option, and you mobilize them, and you engage them. And you talk in their language, not in the language of Chris Hedges, because they don't even know who Chris Hedges is. Most of them don't know who Jimmy Dore is. They don't know who most of them don't even know who Ralph Nader is, which I found inconceivable, but they don't. But they do know that at the end of the week, they don't have enough money to pay their bills. That's what they know. And they know that it's getting worse by the day. So if you talk to them in their language, I think you can get those people out and mount such a massive, united juggernaut at the polls that, yes, we can at least begin to crack this monolithic wall that the oligarchs have put up to shut us out of the system. So what do you say to that?
That's what Bernie Sanders is trying to push now with his political revolution, trying to get progressive Democrats to run for office. And it's happening, but it's happening on a real small scale. The thing is, you know, we got a two-party system, and you get the vote for whoever these two parties put up. This is why Donald Trump won, because they took a flawed candidate like Hillary Clinton, and they dangled her in front of us and said that she's the most qualified. Well, if she's the most qualified, then, you know, I must be crazy, because all I saw when Hillary Clinton ran was World War III, you know, because she's an evil, evil person. And Donald Trump, I voted for Jill Stein. But the thing is Donald Trump gave people an alternative, you know, to what they thought was the powers that be, the ingrained oligarchy of this country.
What was his message?
Drain the swamp. You know, and
yeah,
he didn't.
Yeah, drain the swamp. Right.
Well, they should have known that, because he's a billionaire. They should have known that he was lying to him. But see, the thing is, John, and I don't want to split hairs or argue with you about this, but you can talk to people until you're blue in the face. You can write things until you're blue in the face. This is why I don't write too much anymore, because if I don't have something new to say, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, and I'm saying the same old thing over and over again. It's just like a Bernie Sanders stump speech. And, you know, how can I demonstrate to people that they're voting against their own best interests when they keep going for this two-party crap? And
I agree with everything you're saying, but I put forth something which, by the way, I had 109 candidates signed the Contract for America Renewal, but unfortunately they didn't use it properly in their electoral bids. Okay. I still have Ro Khanna is one who signed it, by the way, and he's a standing congressman. I have some other very notable people signed it. But the point is that yes, people are given a non-choice at the poll. So what if you made a choice clear to them? What if you made it absolutely clear to them what they were getting if they voted for a candidate, and what they would not be getting if they voted for an establishment candidate?
You know, this is what I'm trying to say. Doesn't matter, because even Bernie Sanders the other day, I heard him say that we have to get rid of the dictator Bashar al-Assad. I mean, this guy, he might be great on domestic issues, but as far as anything else, he's just as corrupt as everybody else. So is Elizabeth
Warren.
Yeah.
So is
Elizabeth Warren. She's got $8 million in the bank. I mean, these people, that they'll tailor whatever you want to hear to the audience that they're speaking to, and they'll promise you the world and give you absolutely nothing, just like Donald Trump. And these people get placated. What I'm saying is, it's going to take something to be the catalyst. And I don't know what it is, but it's going to happen, because just like you said, people can't even feed their families anymore.
Okay, all right. I agree with you. And I'm not predicting that what I'm proposing here is the thing. There's no way to predict that. There's no way to know what it is what constitutes that match that just sets off the fire. But what I see, so let's shift to the whole thing about peace, because you brought it up several times. The reason why people are so poor is because of the wars. The war on terror is a fraud. The war on Afghanistan is a fraud. It's the longest standing war in history. People are against it by a vast majority. They want us out of there. They want us out of the Middle East. All right. In fact, that was a big part of Trump's message, his appeal. So how do we get that done? Well, the peace activists go out there and they look back at what took place in the late 60s and 70s, and they say, there it is, there's the ticket. We stopped that damn Vietnam War by marching and burning our draft cards and stuff. Yeah, all right, fine. Well, you know what? all old stuff doesn't work anymore. People got to wake up to the fact it's almost 50 years after the Vietnam War, and everything's changed. Digital technology has changed, the consolidation of the media, everything has changed. So the message has to be completely and totally unique, and it has to be powerful, it has to be undeniable, and it has to talk to that 167 million people on the bottom half of the economy. So here's what I propose, and this, by the way, gets everything done, and I'm not saying it's going to take off, but this would get the job done. I've added up all of the fraud and waste based on conservative government figures since 1992, and it comes to a total of, like I said, I need to update it. So my website says $4.82 trillion. It's actually over $5 trillion now. So let's just say $5 trillion. $5 trillion. The public needs, the peace message should be the Department of Defense, the government, and the warmongers have stolen your money, and we're going to get it back for you. We're going to get your money back. $5 trillion divided by the current population of the United States, which is 328.8 million people, comes out to over almost $16,000 per person. $16,000 per person. For a family of four, we're looking at how much? We're looking at $64,000 for a family of four. And I say, I know this sounds outrageous and people go, oh, they're going to roll their eyes and moan and everything. I say that and there are a lot of candidates out there that are for peace and for ending the wars. They go out and they campaign and they say, I'm going to get you your peace dividend refund. I'm going to get you your $16,000 back from the government. It's going to be paid over 3 years. Every single citizen in the United States of America is going to get a check of over $5,000 each year for 3 years. And we're going to put that money back in your bank account where it should have been in the first place so that you don't have bald tires and your kids aren't wearing shirts with the buttons off. And you're going to put that money back into your pocket so you can get your life back together. Because this is your money. It's your country. It's supposedly your government, of the people, by the people, for the people. This is your due. And I'm going to sign a contract. And I can read you the contract if you want. I'm going to sign a contract with you, the voters, that from when I go to Congress, as your congressman, or I go to the Senate as your senator, I will pass a law which guarantees you this refund. You're going to tell me that, honest to God, that's not going to catch somebody's attention?
Sure it will. Sure it will. But
well,
that's
the plan.
They're still not going to trust you.
They don't have to trust me. They have to. A candidate has to go. What do candidates do? They go out and they go, well, this is what I believe in. Fuck that. They should go out and say, look, I am against these wars too. I am against all of this military waste. But the problem is, it's been going on for 26 years, and it ain't going to stop until we stop it. And here's how we're going to stop it. We're going to start by getting your money back, and we're going to completely change the way that government does business. And you see, the thing is about it, the thing about the peace dividend is it's actually doable. And this is the first thing. So everybody rolls their eyes. Oh, $5 trillion. Where did they come up with the $26 trillion to bail the banks out worldwide in the 2008 crash? Where did all of the money come from, the monetary easing that took place over the past? It just magically appears when the rich need it. Well, we're going to make it magically appear when the people need this money. And I'll tell you, those people on the bottom, maybe Bill Gates doesn't get excited about getting his $16,000 refund, but you're going to tell me that guy, the people, your Uber driver, isn't going to get excited about it? You gonna tell me that the checkout girl down at the Walmart is gonna get excited about getting $16,000 from the government? This is something I honestly believe could set the country on fire. And we don't need the media. We don't need the media because the girl at the checkout counter is gonna turn around and talk to the girl at the next checkout counter and say, "Can you believe this? We got a guy running for Congress and a guy running for Senate who's going to push this peace dividend refund through, and we're going to finally get that money back that was stolen from us." People talk in very – listen, I grew up – I don't know how you grew up, but I grew up very poor. I was in a trailer. I was in a mobile home park when my parents died when I was 14. You know, I know poor people. I know how they talk, and I know how they think. And I don't think they're stupid. A lot of them have just been held back. I worked in a factory when I was 14, and I was blown away by how bright these guys were. These guys were so smart, but they didn't have the college education. They couldn't quote Cervantes and Shakespeare, and they never read Tolstoy. But they were smart people, and those smart people will talk to one another, and they're going to talk about this because everybody knows all – even the people at the top know the system's rigged, but it's rigged in their favor, so they don't talk about it. But we all know we're getting screwed. We know it in our hearts. And that's why, by the way, Donald Trump got elected. That's why Bernie's domestic message resonates, because people know they're getting fucked. It's that simple. So if you talk peace and you talk about changing the militarization of America and the pursuit of war and the fraudulent war on terror, you talk in terms of a refund of the money that's been stolen from people, it's going to at least get some attention, and it's certainly going to cause some serious conversation, I guess what we'd call buzz in this country. And you don't need the media to push it, because you know what? The media, if you look at the media running up to Trump's presidency, it was all negative, making fun of him, talking about how badly he was going to lose to Hillary and so forth. And how did the word spread so thoroughly that he ended up being our president? Well, people talk. They talk over the fence. They talk on the telephone. They talk at the supermarket. They talk in the bar at night and go, "I don't know, man. This Hillary lady. It looks like a real phony to me. I think I'm going to vote for Trump." And they kept, I call it running silent and running deep. And that's how the peace dividend can actually spread and galvanize the public. So tell me what's wrong with this. Nobody ever tells me what's wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it, except that, like I said before, people do not trust politicians anymore. And this is where it's coming to a head. And I don't care if you put it writing, I don't care if you make a law out of it. People do not trust the politicians anymore. And this is what's gonna be the downfall of this country, because they don't trust their leaders anymore, because their leaders lie to them all the time.
Well, of course, and that's one of your favorite guests, Paul Craig Roberts, says that the government has never told the truth in the last 25 years. He's right. They lie about everything. But you're giving up. You're saying, well, all right, they win. We're not going to try anything. All I'm saying to, and by the way, you cannot name a peace activist in America today that I have not contacted. I've sent two copies of my book to Tulsi Gabbard. I've sent copies of my book to Medea Benjamin. Everybody that you could possibly. I've even talked on the phone with Dennis Kucinich. And I talked on the phone with Gareth Porter. I talked to all these people, and they don't get it. They do not understand that as long as they talk in terms of peace and fighting the military in their abstract language of what is this latest one of what do you call it when they stop de-investing in military industries and all this. You know, you talk to your Uber driver and say, "Hey, what do you think? Yeah, we should stop investing in military corporations." What's he going to trigger and say? "Oh, yeah, I mean, I owe at least $500,000 in Raytheon stock. These people don't own stock. So when you talk to them in these terms, they don't understand it. But if you turn to your Uber driver and say, you know, we've been getting screwed by the military and the whole DOD military establishment for so long now. Let's get our money back. And that's because it's a demand. We want our money back. And you get a candidate who can stand up in front of people and say, well, I'm really for world peace. He sounds like a beauty pageant contestant. What if he holds up a contract? Here's the peace dividend contract. I, Timothy Gatto, if elected to a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives representing the 4th District, State of South Carolina, hereby commit to sponsor and vote in favor of legislation which instructs the U.S. Treasury to remit payment totaling $16,396 to every living American citizen. Payment to be made in 3 full installments. Signs the contract. I signed this contract voluntarily and with full appreciation of my responsibility to the citizens of the 3rd District of State of South Carolina should they choose me as their elected representative. Nobody tries anything this bold anymore. This is what's wrong with the left. This is what's wrong with the peace movement. They don't stick their necks out. Do contracts work? Well, the Norquist contract for no new taxes worked, and the Republicans' contract with America in 1994 flipped both the House and the Senate. And guess what? Have you ever looked at the Donald Trump presidential campaign website? He has a contract on his website. He didn't feature it as part of his campaign, but the contract with America totally flipped. People love contracts. They like things in writing. And if a candidate held this up and said, here's what I'm going to do for you, in addition to these other wonderful things, I'm going to get your minimum wage up to $15 an hour. I'm going to protect your Social Security. I'm going to protect your Medicare. I'm going to put single-payer Medicare for all. I'm going to push that. I'm going to push these other things. But number one, we're going to stop this crazy war system because I'm going to get your money back, and that's going to shrink the military budget to something reasonable where we're still safe and we still have a sound military able to conduct its defensive activities adequately. But we're going to stop this insanity that is stealing and that is destroying our communities, destroying our families. And we're going to start by giving, you sir, how many people, you got 3 kids and a wife, okay. You're going to get $90,000 over the next 3 years if I'm elected. You're going to tell me that people aren't going to trust him? They're not going to at least take a chance and vote for this sucker?
Well, you're right. You're right. You know, and if you could get your message across and if you could get it out of the House subcommittee and get it on the floor of the Congress or the floor of the Senate, you know, that'd be great. But the thing is, and Bernie Sanders has proposed some great legislation that never got past committee. Yeah, because they're too damn entrenched.
But Tim,
how are you going to get that message out? How are you going to get that message by running for some kind of office? People aren't going to.
They're not going to believe you. They have two questions. There's two questions. Number one, it's massive electoral insurrection. So when I'm not talking about one district, I'm talking about replacing at least 400 people in Congress. Because this is something I call, you know, the Godfather's rule. The Godfather had a dictum. Make them an offer they can't refuse. All right? Well, I've turned that around. I think that we should make our politicians an offer, our current politicians, the establishment guys that are in the pockets of the oligarchs, we make them an offer they can't accept. And when the public sees they can't accept it, we throw their asses out of office. Nobody thinks in these really bold terms. So here's what I'm saying. In each and every every 2 years, we completely elect a new Congress. So this isn't just happening in your one district. This is happening across the nation. So these subcommittees you're talking about, if this works, are all going to be staffed by people that have signed the peace dividend contract. And they're all going to be there to represent the people. Of course, it's easy to say, well, this can't possibly happen. But you know what? If we don't try something like this, of course it can't happen. Not trying is guaranteeing failure, right?
I don't blame anybody for trying. Yeah, I really don't. And maybe if once I get a chance to mull this over, maybe my opinion would be completely different. But I am so disgusted with the people in this country. You know, that I don't care if you tell them you're going to put $1 million in their pocket. They don't give a shit. You know, and like you said, as long as they could put fresh tires on their car and get the button sewn back in their kids' shirts, they don't give a shit. You know, and they're not going to believe anybody.
But that's my point. They're not going to be able to do this anymore. And I'll tell you what, when this next crash comes, and there is a crash coming in the next year or 2 years, which is going to make the 2008 debacle look like child's play. When that happens, there will be no, believe me, people are going to be ripe and ready for this. They're going to be ripe and ready for a complete, what was the actor's name? The guy on Saturday Night Live, what's his name? He calls for the overthrow of the government. They're ready to overthrow the government. So that takes place either two ways. It either takes place at the ballot box, with a vast, united message and an offer to our establishment that they can't accept. You understand that? You understand that concept? So you've got Mr. Establishment.
But okay, it's going to take something to happen before that it'll ever get any traction. Because
well,
as long as they're in charge of the mainstream media, as long as they're in charge of Congress, as long as they're in charge of the Senate, you know, everybody in the Senate has over $1 million. Every single one of them is a millionaire. Same thing in the House. Just about 90% of them are millionaires, except for like the first termers. And if they're not millionaires now, they'll be millionaires by the time they get voted out or they retire. And the thing is, nothing's going to happen unless there's some big kind of change, a catalyst is going to start.
Well, you know what? The disintegration, and this is where I do really, really admire the work and the analysis of a guy like Chris Hedges. This process is well on its way. This process of disintegration is happening now as you and I speak. And yes, it's going to take somebody to give it that final nudge. Something's going to happen to nudge it off the cliff. But the one thing that is totally always lacking in the progressive wing of our country is a little bit of planning. I mean, the reason why the Republicans and the right have taken over everything is because they started back in 1970 planning on this. They had a vision that has unfolded as a nightmare for the rest of us over the next 45 years, and that's why we're at where we're at right now. We need to start thinking about this right now. We need to come up with, maybe it's not the peace dividend, but we need to come up with something this bold, this stark, and this dramatic, this outrageous. I mean, it's an outrageous idea, but we need something to pull the attention of the public so that they're focused and they're all looking at something that they can all agree on. We can't all agree on the war in Yemen because we don't even know where the fuck Yemen is. We can't even get the president to pull the troops out of Afghanistan. We can't get anything done. Why doesn't the peace movement look? They don't have to look at what I say. They don't have to look at the peace dividend. They don't have to look at their own dismal record. We are going backwards. The military budgets are getting bigger. The wars are becoming more intense. The spread of America's military footprint is expanding across the world. So, I mean, just look at what And if you're doing something and it's completely failing, or if things are even getting worse, you have to stop and say, maybe we're doing something wrong. Maybe our message is not there anymore. I mean, Hedges in that interview with Jimmy Durbin was saying, it's astonishing to think, even 15 years ago, when there was a potential military conflict like the war in Iraq, there were demonstrations. There are no demonstrations anymore. It just doesn't happen. Am I right?
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
You got 20. Well, then the idea is, so let's have a meeting. Well, let's see, we only had 15 people at our demonstration yesterday. What should we do? Ah, I know. Let's have another demonstration tomorrow. I mean, this is stupid thinking, you know? This is really ignorant. Ah, you know, our drive, our fundraising drive only to try to help the humanitarian crisis in Yemen only raised, how much? $7.25. Gee, I know. Let's have more fundraising for Yemen. I mean, that's a stupid thinking. And I talk to these people and I say, look, it's all I'm saying to you is what we're doing now is not working. We need to try something bold. We need to remember the Yippies back in the 1960s? The Yippies? Maybe you were too young.
No, I remember.
Jerry Rubin, Ed Sanders, and Jerry, and they circled the Pentagon and tried to levitate it. I mean, that's funny stuff, but you know what? At least they got attention. They got people, wow, these people are crazy. But yeah, at least they were paying attention. The peace movement and the left in general needs to stop fighting with one faction fighting with another, and they need to start talking to the people and stop talking and yelling at each other because nobody is hearing the message of the left. Yes, Bernie Sanders galvanized people with his message because everything in his domestic program resonated with the pain that they were experiencing on a daily basis. And I say, and I've never been a supporter of Bernie Sanders per se. I also voted for Jill Stein, as you did. I'm very proud of that. But the fact of the matter is, Bernie is what do they call it, a sheepdog, or what do they call it?
Yeah.
He's a pawn of the Democratic Party. So let's just forget about Sanders and let's forget about Elizabeth Warren because she's another millionaire who's got her head up her very dark hole about all matters military and foreign. Let's forget about those people. Let's forget about the presidency. Let's go where the power is. I keep reminding people, the president can't impeach Congress. The Congress can impeach the president. And they also can impeach the Supreme Court. So that's where the power is. We keep talking about Bernie and Elizabeth and maybe Taylor Swift's going to run or maybe Kanye West. I mean, this is ridiculous talk because the real power in the country is the power to make laws. And there's only one institution that does that. That's the Congress. And that's where we need to focus. Community. And you know what's great about it is it's community activism. Because every community has a congressional district. And every state has two senators. So you're working with people in your own community, in your own neighborhood, to focus your energy on what you want done. Now, I think if you want to get the people in those communities involved, give them something. Give them something that will help them directly. And that's what the Peace Dividend Refund is. We can go into all sorts of discussion about it's an infusion not only into their personal bank accounts, but it's an infusion into the economy. Putting $5 trillion into the consumer economy would solve all of the problems that we're struggling with right now in terms of getting our economy functioning again. It would solve all those problems.
Because John, I, taking, I wrote an article about just what you're talking about. I took the money that we're spending on the military-industrial complex, and I divided it into the number of people that were in the country, and I also based it on a four-person family. And I wrote that up just like you're saying, and how much money we could get back. And I wrote this on Op-Ed News. And you know what I got? I got 50 million comments saying that I did the math wrong. You know, it wasn't the idea that, you know, I took the number of people and divided it into the military budget. It was that I did the math wrong. I left some zeros out or something. I didn't put a decimal point in where I should have put it in. But that's what I got. And this is from the so-called progressive left. This is what I got. And when I saw all those comments and stuff, I said to myself, Jesus, even these people on Op-Ed News can't get it. They don't get it, you know? And, you know, you think of, you know, we spend more on the military now and this year than we spent at the height of World War II adjusted for inflation.
Yeah. It's shocking. You know, it's shocking.
And I tell this to people over and over and over again, and it doesn't seem to sink in with hardly anybody. You know, it's just like, you know what they call it? Pie in the sky. Yeah, sure, right. But, you know, maybe you do have a point, and I agree with you completely. If there was some way we could get people to listen, if we could override the noise in the mainstream media, if we could rise above this celebrity worship that we do in this country, you know, if we could get people to actually sit down and take a couple minutes to talk to their friends about politics instead of who won the baseball game yesterday. You know, if we could do that, it would work. And that's the trouble, is getting people to listen, to getting people to work. They're trying. We don't have the time. And I had the same conversation with Finian Cunningham on Saturday. He said, you should get a third party going in that country, because he's Irish, you know. And he says, you should get a third party going in this country. And I said, Finian, we don't have the time to get a third party going, because in 12 years, we're going to hit the point of no return on climate change. We're going to blow ourselves up before we ever get a third party run into where it could ever win an election. We don't have the time. We're at the precipice right now of destroying this whole species. And, you know, I'm 67. I don't really give a shit, because I don't expect to live too much longer. But the thing is, you know, how can we get this done before we kill ourselves?
That's, well, you know, I hark back to your mentioning the Berlin Wall, because that wall was up there for years, decades, and how are we going to, you know, nobody thought it could possibly come down, and then it did. So I agree with you. Building a third party, to me, it's kind of back asswards, you know, because you don't build a party. What you do is you give people legitimate choice, and out of that will grow a third party. That's the way I see it happen. So
you could give people choice. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just playing the devil's